Welcome to the Mid-Stage Startup Momentum Podcast. Each week, we interview up-and-coming founders of some of the fastest-growing mid-stage startups across the world. Your host is Roland Siebeling, who will share some of his own experience helping startups scale from 10 to 1,000 people in a few years. Here is Roland.
Hello, and welcome to the Mid-Stage Startup Momentum Podcast. My name is Roland Siebeling, and today I have with me a very special guest. It's Moshe Polterek. And Moshe, hi, you are representing growth.co, right?
That's correct. Hi, Roland. Great to see you again.
Great to see you. I was also a guest on your podcast. So, of course, I'm happy to return the favor. So, Moshe, just the same question as I ask any startup founder that comes here. What do you do? What is your impact in the world?
Sure. So, growth.co is a hybrid fractional CMO consulting practice and digital marketing agency. I say that with a little bit of a grit in my teeth because I told myself I wasn't going to build an agency when I started out the firm. I wanted it to be exclusively fractional CMO services. However, working with early stage startups, realized that many of them did not have the execution resources internally to execute. And strategy without execution is worthless. So that's where we added in the execution part of the business, which is that agency side. So we work with early stage companies, typically around seed or series A, when they've just found product market fit or signals of product market fit early on. And they then need to take that and build a go-to-market motion. And that's where we come in and help.
So let's delve into some of the things you said there. First of all, seed, pre-seed, sometimes series A. How do you define that in terms of, let's say, either revenues or number of employees? Because, of course, those series terms can be vastly different in people's interpretation, right?
The stage, the nominal fundraising round, or you know how people differentiate the stages of startups, it's somewhat arbitrary, as you mentioned. So that's not as important for us. What is important is, do they have product market fit is the first question. What I found is that pre-product market fit, it is very difficult for an outsider, as much as we'd love to come in and help the company or help you in your startup to find product market fit, it's very difficult for an outsider to really contribute at that stage because the cycles have to be so fast. You're constantly iterating. That stuff just really has to be held close to the chest. So I won't say that we never will work pre-product market fit, but very often that is going to be a kind of a qualifier for us. So you had to have found that signal. Another challenge that startups often have at this stage when they're starting out, they're seeing some success. Oftentimes they will immediately hire an agency, a digital marketing agency, or a junior marketer, kind of like a generalist who will do a little bit of email, a little bit of paid ads, a little bit of social and all that. And like I mentioned at the onset, that strategy without execution is worthless. Execution without strategy often leads to a lot of wasted efforts, kind of the proverbial chicken without a head. So that's really where we provide the most value is our CMOs, myself included, are experienced marketing executives and growth executives who've been there, done that in-house for startups. We will build the strategy and build the team and put the pieces in place to build that machine for growth, which you can then take over. Our goal is to work ourselves out of a job. We're not looking to be, you know, long-term partners, so to speak. We are there to do a job, to build a machine for you and hand the keys to that machine over to you. That's our goal.
Okay, very cool. So let's also delve into some of the terms you said there, right? So of course, the famous one is product market fit. And you said, well, sometimes they have signals of product market fit. So let's hear your definition, or what are the signals that you actually buy into of product market fit? And I'm only asking because I know from experience that many, many founders feel or state they have product market fit, where I would have my doubts.
Yeah, I should have a better answer for you because I have a podcast called Product Market Fit.
You do.
We explore this topic. You were, one of our illustrious guests among many founders and other experts in the industry. And, you know, every week I talk to founders on this topic. So the definitions are very widely. One gave me a threshold of 100 million in revenue as showing true product market fit. You know, others have quote the famous lines of "you know it when you see it." My definition is, and not to kind of be wishy-washy in the definition itself, but I believe in signals of product market fit more than I believe in an actual kind of moment of product market mm-hmm. fit. I think that it's a constant iteration towards a goal. And it's also something that you can lose it once you have it. So it's not just like you get it and then you've passed that right. challenge and now you have a different challenge. You're always challenged with product market fit. Sometimes the market changes and your product gets left behind. Sometimes you're entering a new customer segment, for example, and you have to find product market fit all over again. So in my mind, it's a continuous iterative process of offering something that there is clear demand for. And you feel that in terms of the success of your marketing or sales efforts, when it feels like every single sale is a uphill battle and mm-hmm. you have to convince people of your value and you have to really fight to get people's attention, you probably don't have a really good product market fit.
Can you give us some examples of when you have talked to clients or prospects in the past and like there's this one company that had like such clear product market fit, we knew it right away, and there was this other where we really knew right away, oh, they definitely don't have it yet. And you don't have to mention any names, of course.
So I could speak to a software provider where they clearly had a very valuable software that was a highly specialized SaaS, and their challenge was not in the product and in the need for that product. Their challenge was in the perception and the awareness of not just the product, but also the problem. So they were almost at the bleeding edge of category creation, which is always mm-hmm. a challenging mm-hmm. place to be. And, you know, as we know, category creation, you have to do all of the customer education around the problem, not just the product. So that was somewhat of a challenge that we faced in building awareness, not just for the company, but also for the problem. Mm-hmm. And once people saw the problem, immediately the product became an obvious choice because it was a fantastic product.
Very cool. Very cool. So you mentioned B2C versus B2B. Where do you think it's easiest to have product market fit?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know if product market fit is ever easy. So B2B and B2C are very different, as you know, but they're also mm-hmm. pretty similar in terms of the fundamentals. So if mm-hmm. you think of a startup as essentially you have to find product market fit and mm-hmm. you have to build a funnel that engages with that segment in a profitable way, and you mm-hmm. have to have a lifetime value that exceeds the customer acquisition cost. Like those three mm-hmm. principles are kind of like the core principles of my business philosophy right. that applies to B2B or B2C, doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, within each of those, the product category and also whether it's B2B or B2C changes a lot. You were asking about product market fit for B2B versus B2C. I think that there's pros and cons to each. B2C gives you a lot more opportunity because you have a much bigger playing field to work with. But in terms of like prospects, right? So mm-hmm. you have 7 billion potential customers if you're, you know, a generic product that applies to anybody, right? As opposed to B2B, if you're selling accounting software for service businesses that are between 50 to 200 employees in the US, right? So you've narrowed your scope of potential mm-hmm. buyers into that narrow field. It makes it a little bit more difficult to get to. On the flip side, by narrowing, you have a much clearer idea of who exactly you're targeting. And that's often one of the downfalls of B2C startups, which is less common with B2B, is that they don't fully segment and narrow down their target audience. I feel like B2B startups do that a little bit better than B2C startups often. And B2C also, depending on the product category, is very mercurial, right? So if you're dealing with mm-hmm. anything that's trendy, whether it's social media, entertainment, content, those categories, very hit or miss, very hard to predict whether or not it's going to take off. Mm-hmm. Whereas B2B, if you have a clearly defined problem and you provide a solution to that problem in a thoughtful way that's driven by customer need and not by founder intuition, mm-hmm. usually you can find a market there.
Right. So let's also talk about product marketing. So in many of the companies we've worked with, we found that product marketing was almost the first component you had to get right in a marketing strategy. Can you talk a little bit about that and explain to founders who may not be there yet why product marketing is such a critical component?
Yeah, I totally agree with that sentiment. I think that if you are an early stage startup hiring a marketer, you probably are best off going with a product marketing kind of generalist mm-hmm. rather than a performance marketer or social media or any kind of other discipline within mm-hmm. marketing. The reason is product marketing is how you want the world to perceive you as a company and as a product. You can have the best product in the world. If people don't know what to make of it, then you're not going to be successful, unfortunately, right? So it's not about the best product. It's about how people understand what the product is, why it's valuable to me as a target customer, what I can do with it, and how it compares to other solutions that are out there. I definitely recommend you always start with positioning. And in fact, in our practice at Growth, we will always start with positioning. That's mandatory now. I've made mm-hmm. that mistake a couple of times where mm-hmm. we skipped positioning, went straight to lead gen, because everybody wants, every founder is immediately, they want lead gen, they want pipeline, they want sales. Yeah. And what happens is when you skip the positioning exercise, you end up spending 2-3 months driving leads, spending money, and then realizing that those are not the right leads. They're not converting well, or they're converting and they're churning. They're not the right customer. There's a mismatch of customer to product or customer to expectations or product expectations. So doing that first, you have to sometimes slow down to speed up. Now it's mandatory for all of our engagements. We start with the product marketing, understanding what is the positioning, who is the customer, how do you want the customer perceiving your product as compared mm-hmm. to the alternatives that are out there? And then we can craft messaging around that and go back to the market and say, this is who we are. This is why you should care.
Do you feel that any startup with product market fit or signals of product market fit is already clear on who that customer is, on who their ideal customer profile is?
Not necessarily. Sometimes they are seeing a lot of organic growth and they don't fully understand why. I mean, it's a good problem to have. It's better than most other startup problems.
Yeah.
But this it's a problem nonetheless, and founders should really tap into understanding why are customers so excited about product. I can speak to an experience of a startup that was in the financial services space that was showing signals of product market fits. I'm doing air quotes for those listening. Mm-hmm. Signals of product market fit. It turned out that those early adopters were actually, I don't want to say scamming, because that probably has like a legal connotation to it, but they were mm-hmm. leveraging the product to not in the way that it was intended, in a way that kind of circumvented the financial system that existed. So if you just looked at it from a top line numbers perspective, it looked like they were seeing signals of product market fit, but until they understood the segment that was actually using the product and why they were using it and how they were using it, it wasn't what they wanted. Sometimes you got to look a gift horse in the mouth. So mm-hmm. even if you have some adoption, that doesn't mean necessarily that you know who your customer is and why they're using your product. So you need to kind of scratch the surface and find out why. And then to the point earlier, what we said about product market fit not being a destination, but a journey, you always have to be questioning that. So even if you kind of have it, you may not have it in the next market that you try mm-hmm. to enter. You may not have it with the next product that you roll out, or you may not have it next year because a competitor rolled out something else and now the market landscape has changed. It's something that needs to be continuously updated.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Agree with that. You mentioned that you work with several fractional CMOs, right? So what is typically the profile of those folks, and how long would they typically stay with one particular startup?
Yeah, so our engagements are on average 12 months, but I would say mm-hmm. six to 18 months is the range that I give folks that are interested in learning more. The engagement is usually one day a week, sometimes two mm-hmm. days a week. So think of it as an embedded consultant. They're part mm-hmm. of the team. They're in your weekly stand-up. Sometimes they're managing internal resources or dotted line managing internal resources. The purpose is, and this is, I guess, advice to anybody that's considering working with fractional folks, is mm-hmm. to leverage them for what they're best at, right? You don't want mm-hmm. to hire somebody very senior at a CMO level position and then have them, you know, really spending a ton of time, you know, pulling levers in Meta ads, right? Mm-hmm. For example, everybody in the team is capable of doing that, but that's not the highest and best use of their time. You're overpaying for that kind of service. Mm-hmm.
And what's the typical order in which you recommend startups proceed? They might start with a fractional CMO before they even have a bit of a team in place, or do you recommend they hire juniors or even senior people before they get a fractional CMO.
I'm assuming you're referring specifically to marketing in-house.
Yeah.
And I think that it can go either way. Oftentimes we're supporting hiring. Sometimes we are helping founders understand that the people that are on the team maybe are not in the right roles.
Right.
So that can also be part of, if you already have a team in place, you may engage us to say, hey, we're not sure whether or not we have the right people in the right seats. Sometimes it's great people, they're not in the right seat,
right?
Or the role isn't what's defined. I mentioned earlier about kind of like early stage, super pre-product market fit, it's really hard to outsource. There are some parts of marketing that are harder to outsource than others. For example, content and social media to an extent as well. There's so many ways to do that wrong with outsourcing. I'm not saying that you can't, but you know, social media is about authenticity, and it's very hard to outsource authenticity. So, you know, same thing with thought leadership. You can't outsource thought leadership. So if that's part of your content strategy, then you should have someone internally that can support that. Typically, I think the first hire for most startups should be that product marketing first generalist, someone who can write well, understands customer psychology, can do research, and is numerate. They can do basic analysis. They understand performance data. They don't have to be, you know, data scientists per se, but they have to be able to work a spreadsheet and understand the meaning behind the numbers. That's typically a good place to start.
And let me flip that question, maybe like someone with that product marketer background who would be interested in being the first hire at a startup. How would you recommend they, assuming they get the job, how would you recommend that they tackle that job, in particular working with very opinionated founders?
Yeah, it's got to be one of the most difficult jobs. And there's a meme already on, you know, about the job the job description of that, which is like, you know, 3 pages long. So I feel for the people that step into that role, and I personally been in that role a couple times in-house. I think that prioritization, and it's probably true for most roles, especially early stage roles, prioritization is key there, because it's so easy to get bogged down in execution without having a strategy first. So everybody wants to show progress and momentum and results. And oftentimes we mistake busyness for results, right? A bunch of social media posts is busy. It justifies your paycheck, right? Like I did stuff, right? But did you drive meaningful results to the business? Maybe not, right? What's the purpose of that? So I think that that's probably the easiest trapdoor to fall into, is just to immediately try to be busy, to show that you're busy, to show that you're valuable. And some of that busy work could be great. If you're running experiments and you're tracking your learnings and building off of that, that can be fantastic. That's the ideal case. But sometimes it could just be like, you know, we started a blog and now we're on 5 social media channels just because we have to be, and now we're building awareness, and maybe that's good for the business. Maybe that's not good for the business. Maybe it's important. Maybe it's not. Oftentimes it's just busy work.
Since you're a founder yourself, Moshe, what is some advice you would give to other founders that are coming a bit behind you? What are some of the key learnings that you have adopted?
Behind me and ahead of me, because I'm actually going back into the arena from that.
That's true. And well, you're a successful founder of a consulting firm and a brand new founder of a tech startup. I understand, right?
Yes, exactly. And I've co-founded a venture-backed startup early in my career as well. People joke that startup advice or founder advice is people showing their winning lottery numbers and saying, these are the numbers I chose. So I'm always wary of startup advice. What I would say, though, and I mean, partly that's why I do the podcast. It's not something that makes me money. It's an opportunity to learn from other founders. So I enjoy talking to them and learning from them. I think that number one is practical lesson to look for disconfirming information. It's so easy to, startups are so hard. They're so freaking hard. Every day you're hearing no from people you want to hire, from investors, from customers. You're always hearing no. It's always hard. when you see that little light at the, in, you know, in the tunnel, you want to latch onto it and you want to get excited about it, and you should get excited and you should celebrate the wins, even the small ones, but look for disconfirming information that, you know, don't get convinced, don't buy your Kool-Aid, don't get convinced that you have product market fit just because you, you know, had a line around the booth at a trade show, or you got a bunch of followers on Instagram. People, you know, showed excitement. Excitement is not revenue. You can't take that to the bank. Mm-hmm. So look for that disconfirming information. And I think that just generally the thing that comes back over and over again is that resilience is really the number one attribute that differentiates the winners from the losers. There's so many brilliant founders that were well-funded with great products that, you know, you don't know about them today. You don't know about the companies that they built. And of course there's survivorship bias, but usually it's those that persevere that can roll with the punches, that will live to fight another day and continue battling. Those are the ones that find the product market fit, find success, and scale up.
Excellent. Well, that's a great answer too. Thank you so much, Moshe. So if people want to hear more about Growth.io or about Moshe personally, where should they go? Who should they get in touch with? Where can they find you?
Absolutely. So growth.co, it's growth without the O. So GRWTH.co. That's our website. There's some great content on there, and you can reach out to us via the forms on that website. You can always email me at Moshe@growth.co. Mm-hmm. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well, where I share content and learnings and my journey as a founder, and that's on LinkedIn. And if you are interested in a podcast specifically focused on product market fit and early stage startups, I'd love for you to check out my pod. It's called Product Market Fit, and you can find it anywhere that podcasts are published and YouTube.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Moshe, for joining the Mid-Stage Startup Momentum podcast. It's been an honor to have you.
Thank you, Roland. I really enjoyed this. Appreciate it. And talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Like what you heard? Subscribe to this podcast and leave a review. Tune in next time for more hot startups and interviews with some of the highest momentum startup founders in tech today.